everyone. Welcome to the Camino Cafe podcast. I am Lee Brennan, your host, and I'm so glad that you are here joining us today for this new episode. Las cosas que necesito. Great things are happening all over the Camino right now. One of the biggest announcements is that Casa Suzy reopened, and that is great news. So make sure you book your bed, as they are going to be filling up, because I know everyone's so excited that they reopened. Also, two new affiliates have joined our group of affiliates. We already had Spanish for the Camino and Camino Concierge, and now joining them is Camino Confidence. And Camino Confidence is a Camino tour group that offers retreats for women, as well as Camino planning and Camino Stella. And Camino Stella offers concierge service here in Santiago, as well as a pilgrim balm, photography from the Camino, and walking tours. So there's some really great things going on here. These affiliates, I'm so grateful that they support the Camino Cafe, and I in turn support them. So they are businesses that I trust and can highly recommend that you might want to check out. So today, boy, what a great interview I'm introducing to you today. We have Shoshana Krusky, and Shoshana just wrote a book called Cancer, Kintsugi, Camino, a Memoir. And wow, what a book. She sent me a pretty big sample of the book, and I read through that, and I am totally hooked. I think we had a great conversation. Things get deep, and we talked about so many different topics, but I think you're going to enjoy meeting her. So let's get to today's interview. Shoshana is with me today, and I am just delighted that you're joining us. She is out in Oregon, and it's early morning for her, late afternoon for me, but we're making it work. So thank you for coming to the Camino Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome. As we were chatting before we started the recording, I have been so intrigued as I've kind of watched the arc of your story writer, the book writing, I think, during COVID. And then when I saw your cover, I was like, I've got to talk to you, because that cover is gorgeous and the title as well. So could we start with the cover? And yeah, if you can show everyone, it is just stunning. And I knew that you were an artist. And so the very first thing we're going to talk about is, how did you come up with that cover?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was in Santiago de Compostela, and it was my last day, and I was taking some photos of the cathedral from different angles from the neighborhoods, so not just in this, you know, the city core, and I was actually trying to find the address where I was going to donate all of my gear before I left, and there was just a nice kind of straight view of the cathedral between pretty nondescript apartments, but the sun was really big and the sky was kind of hazy gray, and I just took a snap of that with my phone. And then when I was thinking about covers for the book, I wanted something that was clearly Camino related for those in the know, so that if you saw it on a display somewhere, or you saw it on Amazon, you would realize, oh, this is about the Camino de Santiago or about the cathedral in some way. I have some very beautiful photos of those kind of iconic shots of people with backpacks walking on the lonely gravelly road with the yellow canola fields and the, you know, the sunflowers and the, you know, ruins in the distance. I didn't feel like that was what I wanted. I wanted to use the cathedral, and I thought I would play around with some online image editing programs. And I ran it through several iterations of several different programs to kind of get the look that I wanted. And so that's I wish that I could do that kind of swirly business on it, but that was a computer that did that. But I liked it because this was empty sky. And when I saw this, this design style, kind of a Van Gogh-y design style, I thought, oh, well, that looks like the Milky Way. So that fits.
Yeah.
And then I was able to manipulate colors and saturation to get it a bit of a rainbow progression. And I thought, well, that's good, because there just are not a lot of LGBTQI books about the Camino, and I identify as lesbian. And so I wanted a little bit of that. And then one of my friends said, hey, that turret there kind of looks like a seated Buddha. And I thought, well, that's nice. That works. And then somebody said, but what's with the gray sun? Is that supposed to represent breast cancer? And I thought, yeah, okay, fine. I mean, I'm willing to take found symbols. And I tried it in a couple of different colorways, and people actually, some of my friends liked other colors that were duller better, but it looked like Soviet science fiction. And that wasn't the look I was aiming for. It looked like kind of post-apocalyptic 1978, like post-radiation. It just was not quite the look. But I think that the cover also, for me, once I started popping the colors up, really captured the hallucinatory feeling that I think many of us have after we've been out on the meseta. And I was walking in successive heat waves. Yes. So it was routinely over 38 Celsius, over 100 Fahrenheit, and just thumping along in pain, not sleeping very well on the plastic mattresses under those circumstances. And I thought, well, the cover should be hallucinatory too, because the content is fragmentary and at times slightly out of my mind. So, you know, I want the cover to be good advertising for what you're going to get.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, sometimes I think when you're walking through a bookstore, you don't realize all the care and the planning that goes into creating a cover. And I love hearing your story about it. I mean, not only is it beautiful, but now it's very symbolic to me. I love that.
Thank you.
Talk about the title, also very fascinating. So talk to us about how you decided that this would be your title, because I really love the wording of it.
Thank you. Well, the title is Cancer Kintsugi Kamino, a memoir, because I wanted it to be clear what it was. I at the time that I started writing it, there were no other titles popping up on WorldCat that looked like that. And now it turns out, since then, someone has published a book called Cancer Kintsugi, but it's cancer focused.
Okay.
So that's okay. I think our books are different enough. One will know if they got the right book. So kintsugi is the Japanese art of gold joinery. So when you see a bowl and it's got kind of gold tracery on it, that is kintsugi or kintsukuroi. I may be mispronouncing that. But there are a couple of different ways to refer to it. But what they all describe is a method of repair of something that has been broken, but with the implication that it is more beautiful and more valuable and more poignant for having been through the process. And so it's kind of opposite to the way that we think about aging, for example, in United States majority culture. And the idea is that things become more meaningful as they age and change. And so that was a concept that I wanted really to hold in terms of my cancer experience, in terms of other shifts that I describe in the memoir. And I had a whole lot of other titles that had many more words in them and were more explanatory. And when it came down to it, I was writing for permission, because if you're going to quote the poet Sappho, her fragments are very short. And so you can't really, in my opinion, you can't quote Sappho without getting permission from the publisher, unless you're going to do it in her form of Greek, because you're quoting too much of the text for it to be fair use. And so I was writing to a university press and I needed to put a title in. And I thought, well, I need to figure out right this minute what my title is.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I want it to be a poetic title in that I want it to have consonants, which is that's the same sound at the beginning of each word. And I want it to scan nicely. And I want it to feel like it could be part of a line of poetry. And it also needs to say what it is, or else I'm going to have to put in an explanatory subheading, and that gets tedious and they get left off. So in a way, I had been thinking about it for several years. And in another way, it was kind of a found object. It just was what came to my mind when I was sitting in a cabin on Whidbey Island in Washington, trying to get as much writing done as I could in a week, and realized I have to have a title if I'm going to ask for permission.
Yeah. Well, what really caught my eye about it is, I think in three words, you know right away, mm-hmm. at least the framework of what this book is going to be about. And right. in particular, when I was thinking about the brokenness and the repair that yes. I feel like a lot of pilgrims like myself can identify that we're all broken in some way. And mm-hmm. Whether it be age or some type of challenge that we've gone through with health or relationships, that we do have that growth and then that brokenness, you know, like the Leonard Cohen, you know, it's where the light right. gets in. And then, you know, the whole concept of the gold filling in and, you know, this bowl is, say, if it was a bowl that was broken, it's still very useful. And now maybe it's a little more beautiful with those cracks mm-hmm. that have been filled with gold. So yeah. I thought it was a beautiful way to name your book. And it really speaks a lot. I'm wondering, if we go in next to a quote from the book, you were so kind to send me some excerpts. Unfortunately, with my being in Spain, I haven't been able to read the full book, and we kind of scheduled this interview quickly, but I was able to read all the excerpts that you sent to me. So thank you very much.
Sure.
And, first I want to say, I love the way your writing style. So maybe we should start there before I do this first quote, but, it's very unique, I think, in the genre of Camino books. So can we talk a little bit about the inspiration that you had for writing and the type of your style? Because it's not the point to point. There's no, I started to Saint Jean and then tomorrow, you know, I was in Roncesvalles or Zubiri. It doesn't read like that. So can you kind of give those that haven't yet had a chance to read your book, how you would describe your writing style and why you chose that style for your memoir?
Sure thing. Thank you. Yeah. I've never been tremendously good at writing prose that gets from point to point. Mm. I can write a scientific article quite nicely. I can edit professional writing in that mode. I find it to have great utility, and I also enjoy reading it. So I really like reading people's Camino or cancer narratives, where it goes kind of a storyline point to point. This happened, mm-hmm. and then this happened, and this was the insight I had about it. I think that's really lovely. And I felt no draw to write that because mm-hmm. it already exists in so many wonderful forms.
Right.
And I looked at my journals over many years, and I think the style derives from my journal writing, which is a mix of reportage, kind of more documentary narrative writing, and poetry, and relating fragments to each other, which is certainly something that I do in a lot of the poetry that I write. And not necessarily spelling out the connection from section to section, not necessarily telling the whole story as if I were going to do an autobiography and say, and then I went to this high school, and mm-hmm. let me tell you about working on the literary magazine and my friends at this high school, and let me tell you in slightly disguised ways about who I had relationships with at college, I'm not good at that.
That's so interesting because you've written a lot of things academically. I mean, you've been published already, but they have been more academic, which I would imagine are more.
It's boring and sturdy. And I taught myself to do it back in the old days when I was an English teacher before I became a psychologist. Uh-huh. And I teach my students to do it. And I sometimes give them my writing from my first couple of years at college, my academic writing. And they say, well, but Dr. Karevsky, this is terrible. It's not organized. There are no transitions. I can't tell what point you're making. And the answer is yes, I didn't know how to do this kind of social sciences academic writing professional publication writing until I needed to teach it to middle schoolers. And then I learned to do it. So I can do it, but I don't like to. I like to do this. And particularly for this topic, when I thought, how do I express this rather than having parallel narratives and without having this be a memoir that suggests that why I went on the Camino was kind of only because I had had cancer. What came before the cancer, which was a big deal? What came before it? What was it like? What came after it? What was the Camino? What came after the Camino? And so I wanted to put them into a broader context. Rather than aiming for seamlessness, I wanted to draw attention to the fact that, you know, I think our life narratives are fragmentary and we pick out pieces and we tell a story. As a psychotherapist, that's the kind of work I do. I am a narrative psychotherapist, which means I'm working with people about their metaphors, largely about examining their unconscious metaphors, their processes, the symbols that they're using, the stories that we all tell ourselves, and then shifting those in a more desirable direction, or at least a direction that tells the story in a different way. And so I thought, well, I want to write my memoir that way, in a way that draws attention to its artifice. At the same time, I went to Brown University and I have a master's degree in short fiction writing from the 1980s. Okay. And at that time, the vibe in fiction writing, at least in that environment, was very postmodern, which suits me. So not using the standard narrative, or at least calling attention to it. But the metaphor, which I talk about in the memoir, was the text is a body, so chop her up, boys. I mean, that's my phrasing of it, but that was what I got over and over again. Yeah. And I would argue with my my advisor and say, don't characters, even in a postmodern story, get to have psychology? Don't they get to have privacy? Don't they get to have aspects of the story that we as the reader don't know? And isn't there some coherence? I don't think you can chop a text up so much that you can't read a story out of it. And I got a lot of blowback on that, and it stopped me from writing for a good long while. So I thought, if I'm going to write my memoir, part of what it's going to be is my response to that, what I've learned over the years of reading and writing and being a therapist. And so it's also explicitly a response to the idea of postmodernism as, for one thing, aggressing against a body of text that's construed as female, and then leaving it there to bleed out and die. That's not my idea of a good story. It's interesting as a thought experiment, but I don't think it's what the best postmodern fiction does. And so I thought, well, maybe I can write a postmodern memoir that also serves as a critique and response to that.
Now, that is fascinating. Well, from what I've read, I think you hit the bullseye on it.
Thank you.
I want to read just a little bit of a passage to kind of give folks a little idea of, some things from your book. So there's a portion that says, "Cancer and the Camino are secret societies. We recognize each other by our symbols and signs. Cancer is a question with no compelling answers. The Camino is answers without knowing all the questions. The body of the land is not fractured, but continuous, always repairing itself and always in decay." I reread this section numerous times. It just really hit me. So I wonder if you could just kind of share what you were thinking about as you were writing this, and kind of take us from there a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think that it's a good example of what I'm talking about. So the piece that you just read is three short paragraphs of one or two sentences each. And so they're being expressed as having a relationship with each other, but they're not necessarily in a kind of a direct narrative relationship with each other. And so in some way, I was thinking there about just variations on the theme. And what are thoughts that accrue together And as we were talking about earlier, my writing process is, I'm a qualitative researcher, so I can use the software, though now that I'm retired, I don't have to. But what I prefer is when I'm looking at an interview or I'm trying to put together a text like this from pieces that I've previously written or how to interweave quotes, I print it out and I cut it up and I tape pieces together and
I saw that on a post. I didn't understand what was going on there. Now it makes sense.
I use highlighters, I use arrows, I pin things to the wall, I walk around and look at it and weep as I try to make sense out of it, which is how I wrote my dissertation as well. So that's a very comfortable writing style for me. And so part of the question in putting this together is which pieces go together, not because they're necessarily telling the same story, but because they're, maybe you could think of it as call and response, so that the voice in your head says, these two things, Cancer and the Camino, are similar because they're secret societies. You recognize, you see the little pink ribbon on somebody's backpack. You see the shell. And you wonder, you see the yellow arrow on somebody's socks and you think, is that a Camino sock? Did you go on the Camino? And so we're looking and we know each other and we're sensitized to that. Mm. And then I think that leads to, so are we looking for answers or are we looking for questions? And how good are we at knowing that sometimes we don't have satisfactory answers and we don't even have all the questions? And then that makes me think about things being incomplete or broken or changed or repaired. And so as I'm walking along the Camino, I'm stopping and scribbling in my tiny little notebook, which my friend Laura, who I walked with for a few days, referred to as my fetal Moleskine notebook, because it's just tiny. And I actually have an embryonic one as well, but it's too small for journal writing. So then I'm stopping by the side of the way and writing things like the body of the land is not fractured, but continuous. And people are stopping and saying, middle-aged lady, are you okay? Do you need some water? It's like, no, it's fine. I'm writing.
Just journaling.
That's right. Yeah. And so then after that piece that you quoted, there's a haiku. Haiku and other poetic pieces kind of punctuate this. And the one that follows that says, conversations in the present indicative, the way is just now. Does two things. One for me is that's a reminder that you can get caught up. I can get caught up in philosophizing and making patterns, and that one returns to the present moment, to your body, to the environment you're in, to your breath. And maybe that's what matters more than questions and answers. So hopefully it accomplishes that as kind of a coda to that section of the book. And also the form that it's in, the form that the memoir is in large part is Basho's Haibun style. So Narrow Road to the Interior is in that style, where he will tell a paragraph or two, sometimes up to a page of travel narrative about what he was doing, deceptively simple, but picking out details that form a harmonious whole. And then those are either ended with or interleaved with haiku that typically are, even if they're about the thing that he's writing about in that paragraph, you don't say, and here's a haiku that I wrote that was about this section of the Camino or this experience of going to a retreat center. And I like that form very much because it is discontinuous on one level and for an active reader, highly continuous, because you're asking, well, how do these things go together?
Yes, yes.
And there are a couple of books of Camino poetry, some of them in English, some in Spanish, that I've read. And there are there is a cancer narrative. I just read a lesbian narrative called Tough Girl.
I haven't read that.
Yeah, she was an Olympic swimmer from Portland, Oregon, from the Portland area. And there, one of the books that I read, and I think it was one of the cancer ones, does use the Haibun form. Mm. So I tried to read Camino books that were not just the regular all day and all night I read Camino books and all day and all night I read cancer memoirs, but also was about some of the more specific topics that I was addressing to make sure that I wasn't stepping on anybody's toes and that there was a reason for me to tell my story in my particular way rather than it being repetitious.
Yeah, I really liked it because I felt like it gives the reader a little more work to do. We're not just spoon fed everything, you know, we got to kind of dig in there and kind of think as I was reading and like, how is this drawing together? So I really enjoyed that. And I knew that you wrote poetry and haikus. And I wanted to go back and mention that you're actually the cover of your book. And when folks look it up, if they're not watching the video right now, if they're listening on the podcast, just know that you can buy artwork on your Redbubble account. So that was really lovely to see. And also some of your haikus. So I'm curious on your Camino haikus, do you write them in the strips of paper? And then like, what's your method on your haiku writing?
Mm-hmm. Usually I scribble them while I'm driving, pretending that I'm not doing something that I shouldn't be doing while I'm driving. I try to think about them and play with them in my head if I'm not somewhere where I have paper and a pen or can't narrate because I don't already have the phone set up for navigation. I do try to keep my eyes on the road and my hands on the wheel. Every once in a while, I'm compelled to pull over and write something. But mostly what I do is I say it to myself again and again, and I say it out loud, and I pay attention to the sounds and the rhythm. Mm-hmm. And I try to figure out how to remember it, at least enough that then I can revise it if I haven't done that in my head. And if I get where I'm going and I remember that, then I write it down. Okay. And if I get where I'm going and I don't, then I say this is good practice, just letting it go free. And maybe it'll be back when I drive back home again.
Yeah, I've tried my hand at some haiku writing and I found it, I don't think I'm very good at it, but I found it extremely meditative. And I wanted to ask you about that. Is it a source where you feel in flow as you're writing your Camino haiku or other haikus? Is it meditative for you?
I think really almost all of the writing for the memoir, for example, which is a mix, and a mix of different writing styles as well as that. And that all felt like flow, except for the section where I was writing about cancer and trying to be really in the moment with it, because that was an experience of being, in many ways for me, knocked out of flow. And really being more in a recording mode and just grimly accounting for my experience. Mm. And so I think that stylistic difference was important for me to demonstrate in the memoir as well. But I've written a lot of sonnets over time, and that's a very fixed poetic form. And so I can count off syllables without even being aware I'm doing that. I can write you a Shakespearean or Elizabethan sonnet in an hour with a topic or an image. It may not be great, obviously so, but I think that way. I think in iambic pentameter. And so the haiku makes me break that up and think in a different way, which I'm very appreciative of. And I would say it's more meditative than working in a form, though not necessarily more meditative than walking. Ba-bum, 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 ba-dum, 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 ba-da, which is iambic pentameter, the sonnet form.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, I love being able to talk about all this writing, but I'm sure some listeners and viewers are probably wanting us to get to the Camino parts.
Yeah.
In reading one of the excerpts, you mentioned that a friend of yours had mentioned the Camino to you. You had not heard of it before this mention. Mm-hmm. And then I believe you mentioned a little bit later that it was maybe another 4 or so years before you then got the permission health-wise to be allowed to walk. So could you kind of walk us through, you know, you had your cancer diagnosis, you're going through your treatments, and then this mm-hmm. discussion happens. So help us understand. I don't want to give away, you know, your whole story, because obviously yeah. that's in your book, but, you know, give us a little more detail of what you'd like to share.
Yeah, I mean, I really found out about the Camino in one of those incidental ways. One of my colleagues said, we were talking about vacations, and she had and has young children. And she said, I would really like one of these days to, you know, to walk the way of St. James, do you know, with my family, just a piece of it. Do you know what that is? And I had kind of a vague idea of it, just probably from a reference in some Rick Steves book or a book of, you know, hikes for you and your family in Europe. But when she said it, I just thought, well, that would be really, that sounds really interesting. Mm. And I didn't immediately think that I would do it because it was also a pilgrimage trail. I'm Jewish. That was not my pilgrimage. Yes. And I should say I'm a Jewish atheist, so it's not my right. pilgrimage in two different ways. And then, you know, and so I'm going through the whole cancer thing, and that's for the kind of cancer I had and the kinds of treatment that I did, that was pretty much a year of active more than half a year of active treatment, and then a certain amount of time to adjust to what they don't refer to as active treatment, which is hormone suppressing medication. It makes it for me, it's hell on my joints. It makes it very hard for me to maintain emotional equilibrium, physical equilibrium. I don't know why it's considered non-active treatment. And that's something that I'm doing for 10 years.
Even now, every morning. Even though you're 10 years out from your original diagnosis.
I am 7 years out from original diagnosis and 6.5 from starting tamoxifen is the medication. Wow. So I have several more years of that to go, but it affects walking, and it kind of affects my sense of vulnerability in the world.
Oh, really? Yeah. How so? What do you mean?
Because everything pisses me off and makes me feel hopeless. And I talk in the memoir about just trying to open a jar and not being able to because of the kind of surgery that I had, and that would make me just burst into frustrated tears. So clearly there was a task that needed to be accomplished about not new normal. That's not a phrase that resonates for me, though you hear it a lot about cancer, but what's the new abnormal going to be? You know, how will I be in the world without having, you know, successful cancer treatment or presumptively successful cancer treatment take myself away from me? Take my being away from me. And so then I, as I was trying to get myself back together physically and emotionally, psychologically, I became more interested in the question of, well, what do I want to do that I haven't done yet? Because this is always a good, you know, cancer is a great wake-up call for mortality. And so there were several things that I wanted to do. I wanted, for example, to go to Antarctica and see more penguins. I wanted to go do a week-long solo silent retreat. So there were activities that I wanted to do. And I started thinking, you know, I actually want to walk this. I want to walk this Camino. I am, you know, I'm Jewish all the way down, according to 23andMe. Yes. And from almost entirely from Europe. There's a little East Asia and a little North Africa in there, but looking like around 10% Sephardic Jewish, which would be Iberia, and then around 80-something percent Ashkenazi, which would be primarily, you know, Russia, Ukraine, Czech Republic, Poland, Germany. And so this is where my people are from. But when I go to Europe, I feel kind of anxious every time I go to Notre Dame or some other cathedral. It looks very beautiful and I want to engage with it. And I also feel really angry and excluded and exiled and kicked out and victimized by the other European cultures in which Judaism resided. And I think that's just historical fact, but I thought, well, it's been, you know, over half a century that I've been feeling that way. So maybe it would be time to let go of that story. Wow. And so I thought, well, I'll bet the Camino would be really good for just sort of burning that out, including that maybe on the Camino, I'll take some days and I'll do some things that are really not Jewish. I will pray to St. James. I mean, that's just not what you do when you're a Jew. I will go into the cathedrals and I will light candles.
How did that feel? Tell us about the first time that you did that.
Well, it was creepy and weird, but I felt
creepy
like it was
weird. Yeah.
So I persisted anyway. I mean, in the same way that, you know, if you've ever gone to somebody's I mean, not even necessarily religious services, but cultural events.
Yeah. And it's totally strange.
Yeah. Right. You know, you go to somebody's hook up with somebody and you go to their families for Thanksgiving, if your families do Thanksgiving. And you get there and you discover, oh, they don't do Thanksgiving, they do no Thanksgiving. And they only serve, you know, food indigenous to North America. Right. And they talk about that. Or you go and you find that they use margarine instead of butter. Or you go and you find that the turkey has a chestnut stuffing and that's just weird because you want to sage dress it. And it can really fluster people because it just kind of brings you up against, there are lots of things that I think are reality and what they are is my bubble of reality. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that that's really sustained, you know, I took 42 days on the Camino. And so that's a good long time to go into a lot of churches and peer through the windows of a lot of chapels and notice lots of religious statuary. At one point, someone gave me a little cross and I wore it. And that occasioned a tremendous amount of really, what for me was, I thought, very useful and interesting thinking about. So is this like passing? Is it like pretending that you're straight? Is it a pretense of being a Christian, or is it simply not correcting people who have some notion of who I am because there's a tiny little cross on my waist pack? And in fact, I continued to wear it after the Camino until it was time to give it away, which is a story that I tell. And I got so that I felt very positive about more positive about the intersection of religion and culture and the different religions and the different cultures. And I think got a little taste of what Desmond Tutu talks about when he talks about, you know, acceptance and forgiveness and that those are not the same thing as letting people off the hook.
Yes.
So I still hold European cultures accountable for their past and present behavior. And I hold Jewish cultures accountable for their past and present behavior, Palestine being one example of that. But I just felt it became more natural for me to kind of move in and out of that and to be appreciative and not to be pissed off. And so that was helpful in other areas of my life. I'm usually not a very pissed off person, but this is, I mean, they could, if tamoxifen needed a name for what it does, I would call it like sore ankles, pissed off medicine. It really has a profound effect on me.
I had no idea that it did that.
It doesn't for some people, it's my special metabolism. So all of that I thought was really interesting. And I was already, as a therapist, doing some spiritual interventions with my clients when that was a good match for them and they wanted it. But being really careful about what's called scope of practice, in that I was not a religious practitioner. And being in Oregon, most of the clients I was working with, if they have that religious perspective, were Christian, although that was not my most recent caseloads experience. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I want to be able to talk about this more, because I had so many conversations on the Camino about how important this is to people. Mm. And so I actually did sign up as a reverend, which you don't do as a Jew, with the Universal Life Church Incorporated, so that it would be in my scope of practice as a reverend, even if an internet reverend, to be potentially raising some of these questions with some of my clients, again, where it was appropriate and desirable to them. But that comes from being on the Camino and being with people and listening very intently to what they had to say about what it all meant to them.
I love how multi-layered your Camino was, and the amount of awareness that you brought, and the transformation that you're talking about of some of this anger being let go.
Yeah.
And the growth that resulted and how it impacted your personal life as well as your professional life. That's really interesting. I wonder, I'll read another passage in a moment, but I'm wondering right now, how did your family and friends react? Because, you know, you were still in pain dealing with the mm-hmm. aftermath of all of this and the ongoing medication side effects. How did they feel when you made this announcement that, hey, I'm going to head to St. John, I'm going to, you know, just walk a few 800 kilometers across mm-hmm. northern Spain? What was the reaction?
Well, I mean, of course, I'll start with my medical team, who, as you alluded to, required me to be at a certain point in my physical recovery to say, yes, that's an okay idea from a medical perspective. And a lot of that had to do with backpacks, but it also had to do with my joints and my balance. And so I waited until I had the okay from my physical therapist and somebody who was doing certain other kinds of assessment with me. My family is used to me going off on my own. Okay. For one thing, I was single for many years. And so that if I wanted to go on vacation, that was one of my options.
Right.
I had done some solo travel to consult and volunteer and do some other more professional tasks in both Vietnam and Cambodia. And by the time the Camino came up, I had been to Antarctica on my own, that is on a ship with other people, but mm-hmm. traveling on my own. I had been to a silent meditation retreat on my own. And so they were used to that. The question, I think, was, they had a lot of pragmatic questions. Well, where do you sleep when you're doing something like this? Are you going to be up on some mountain with no cell phone service? What will you do if you need a rescue? Are you going to be entirely surrounded by people who are very religious Catholics? And how will they treat you? Will it be okay for you as a not particularly in the closet lesbian to be out in this kind of community? And a couple of people said things like, well, don't get all religious on us, which I found just fascinating. And didn't pursue, though it gave me a lot to consider. Well, what happens when you have a religious epiphany? And how do people, there's a song that I guess I would consider it jazz. The group is Tuck and Patty. And they sing a song with the lyrics that say, my friends don't treat me not like they used to. Friends don't treat me like they used to since I laid it down, since I laid my burden down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what would that be like? What would it be like? I didn't think I'd have an epiphany.
Right.
I don't swing that way. But if I did, you know, you want to be a little prepared for that. mostly yeah. people were very supportive, even if they didn't get why I was doing it. I did it in summer, so it didn't interfere with teaching. I did need to talk with my therapy clients as they came into my practice about the fact that I was going to take one of my long vacations and, you know, get them all set up.
Right.
Which has been interesting, because then for some of those clients, they've the Camino became part of their metaphor and their symbol system in the therapy, even though I was the one who went rather than them. So that's always kind of interesting to hold the boundary well. Also, I think if people say, where are you going on vacation, uh-huh. it's good to tell them. That's just me. Other people may yeah. differ.
Yeah.
But I, you know, my family said, we need you just as is usual when you travel on your own. There needs to be some way for you to check in every day, so we know you're not, you know, like dead and murdered in a ditch somewhere. And I didn't know what the internet scene was like, really. It was before I was in all these Camino communities on Facebook and the Camino Pilgrims Forum and the different organizations. And so I used a program called Polar Steps, which can do some kind of semi-passive tracking, in that if you leave it on and you walk by a bar that has Wi-Fi, it'll ping like many of the other systems.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people can see if suddenly, you know, they thought you were going to be in Astorga today and you're in A Coruña, then maybe they need to try and get in touch with you because something may be wrong. But mostly the question was, how will we know you're not dead in a ditch? And where are you going to sleep? And will you be safe enough? And mm-hmm. don't be gone for too long, because we'll miss you. Mm-hmm. And that seemed reasonable.
Well, you mentioned that some of your friends or family questioned, you know, how will you be treated as a lesbian? And how will you be treated amongst maybe a trail full of Catholics? And right. I wonder now, after walking, you know, how did you feel you were treated during that? And mm-hmm. what would you say to them now after walking, or anyone else that would yeah. have those concerns?
Yeah, I think, well, for one thing, there is an LGBTQ Facebook Camino group, and I would recommend joining that right. because what's that's going to be a source of, it's called something like LGBTQ Camino, but I'm not sure, but it's, I imagine if you search for that, you'll find it. Or go on any of the other Camino Facebook pages and say, where's the queer Camino group? Okay. People will say. I am neither in nor out of the closet, I guess I would say. I don't tend to raise that aspect of my identity unless it's pertinent to the conversation. So I was not wearing a rainbow patch because it's been a really, really long time since I had this realization about myself, and I find it kind of boring. Yeah. So for me, I didn't feel like I need to necessarily advertise or attract other LGBTQI pilgrims, though I notice what kind of iconography people put on ourselves on the Camino, in the same way that I wasn't wearing a pink ribbon, and so which is the breast cancer symbol. But I noticed a couple of people who were, and sometimes had conversations with them about that. I experienced no issues, but also it wasn't something I was talking about. I don't know how it would be if I were more actively out. I don't know how it would be if I were, wearing some big queer t-shirt when I encountered, you know, for example, people who are standing by the side of the road shaking holy water onto people. I don't know what it would mean to them, but I didn't experience anything problematic or negative.
Yeah.
I think only talked about having a wife with one person, and that's because we were having an intimate conversation and had known each other for several days, and
yeah.
he had supported me in taking the bus one day when I had some pretty excruciating blisters under my toenail from that descent from Roncesvalles, and just,
oh, it's brutal.
God, so terrible. And just needed a day to sit with my foot in a tub full of salt water and think lovely thoughts in Burgos. But he's the only person I had that conversation with, because it didn't come up. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I asked you, because I will say to folks that I feel like sometimes the Camino is kind of like this great equalizer of no titles. You know, I felt like for me, it was one of those few times that I really felt, I was just me, just me. You know, I wasn't a wife, a mom, a this, a that.
Right.
I'm just Lee. I was just a pilgrim.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that experience as well, and just felt very much like, I like people to know me, but there's also something interesting about nobody knowing me. Not in order to be intentionally mysterious, but just to say, whoever I am is who I am while we're sitting together in Leon, and I'm insisting on buying you a cup of coffee because I know you've been staying at the Donativos, and maybe or maybe not can afford a cup of fancy coffee. So, and talking about how is it for you again, how is the way right now? How are you right now? People did a lot of storytelling. I didn't get asked very many questions about myself, and that may be because people perceived me as talkative, and so they figured I'd say if I wanted to say something, or it may just be that people were, a lot of people walk the Camino for curative reasons. I was walking more to try to get my equilibrium back, metaphorically and physically. And so I think people often are very much in their own process, and that was really okay with me. It just kind of didn't come up.
Yeah, well, I was kind of wondering too, you're probably such a good listener. I mean, with your background, that I would imagine people probably really enjoyed speaking with you and telling you, right?
Hopefully so.
I wanted to read just one other short passage and then invite you to maybe share one of your favorite passages. But in this particular one, you talk about, you're talking about a frog in a new pond, and you say, is all travel pilgrimage? Clearly not. Are all journeys? Does it matter if the destination is sacred or secular, exterior or interior, motion full or still? What about disease? Is disease a journey? Is a journey a disease? Is cancer a pilgrimage? What about cancer treatment? And so on. So I just wonder if you could kind of talk to that, because I think that's always a big debate, isn't it, in our Facebook groups, and what makes a pilgrim, what equals a pilgrimage? And when I read that really stood out to me. So I'd like to know more of your thinking on that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'll start by saying I don't have answers to any of that. And I think it's fun to juxtapose experiences or ideas that either are not necessarily immediately culturally relevant to each other, like going on a pilgrimage and having cancer. Don't tend to get compared that much. Or when they do, they may get compared in particular ways. And so how do you shake it up and make those metaphors really live? How do you make the analogies come to life so that we're paying attention to them and paying attention to how we're telling the story of our own experience, what we're noticing, what it tells us about ourselves? So I don't have answers, and I don't have answers about what makes somebody a pilgrim or what makes it a pilgrimage. I know a lot of people really want to define that, and it's really important to them. And it's not for me to say that that's not important. It's not important to me, and I would raise the question about it. What if what you're thinking, what if the model that you're developing is not the only way to see things? What would that mean for you? The Camino community is like any other group. I mean, I was a feminist in high school, involved in feminist, national feminist organizations. And, you know, there were a lot of rules about who was a feminist. And when I moved to Oregon, there were a different set of rules about who's really a lesbian. And are bisexual people, you know, really members of this community? And who's really Jewish and splits in, you know, synagogue communities? And so I think that's just, that's a categorizing thing we do, but I think what we can do is be aware of it.
Yeah, I love your question about how would you be if your model were different? I think you said something along those lines. That's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think about Hesse's Magister Luti, the glass bead game, quite a lot, actually. And I think about making patterns that are very beautiful and sometimes making patterns kind of like, you know, cook-off television shows where it's like, oh, and by the way, you have to use asparagus and fennel in your dessert. It's like, oh, okay, I like that challenge. I could make it. But, you know, what happens when you play with the rules? And I think that relates back to this idea that I was telling you about from my training at Brown about what happens when you shake up the narrative? What happens when you shake up how you tell the story? And I have a friend who just wrote an article about how is a review of Alice Walker's new journal publication by Paula Smith. And she talks about, you know, the journal as a different writing form and different ways of expressing what your journal is. And I just find that fascinating. And so I'm quite interested when people tell me these are kind of my rules for pilgrimage, or this is who's a Torregrino and this is who's a Bisagrino and this is who's a real Peregrino. Mm-hmm. And then I would tend to say, or Peregrina, you know, but how do you get playful so that you don't get all wound up in your story and then feel like you somehow didn't meet your own rules or you can't express other aspects of yourself. And I think the Camino has the potential to really be a metaphor for tremendous self-liberation and flexibility, but only if you know to ask it for that.
Well said. Very well said. All right. Well, I want to give you a chance if you want to share maybe a passage that you particularly love or...
Sure. So, it helps to have lived in Jerusalem among my co-religionists with whom I didn't share a religion. We figure out how to live in peace by understanding others' practices as not idolatry. It helps to have had cancer, learned rituals and rites that hold death's reality front and center. The proliferation of human rituals and icons shows how we yearn toward meaning and that it is easiest to remember and reinforce when it is repetitive and concrete. Although I wasn't raised with Jewish religion, I was raised in Jewish culture, although often not overtly identified. This makes it hard for me to see symbolic representations of the divine as licit. They appear to be avodah zarah, false works. I wrestle with this, she Jacob and dogma angel. It is the difference between a thing and its representation, a misinterpretation of metaphor, which is, after all, a means of comparing by highlighting shared characteristics. The symbol is mistaken for the object, as much a failure of the rules of metaphor as is attributing the unlike characteristics from one object to another, a shaky syllogism. I long for trinkets, amulets, and charms. I act as if with and without belief. I surround myself in meaningful air, the austerity of an imageless God.
Those last three sentences of that, that was actually one of the excerpts that you sent to me. Would you just read those last three again?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I act as if with and without belief. I surround myself in meaningful air, austerity of an imageless God.
Wow. Wow. I think that we should end there.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. This has just been absolutely fascinating. And I'm just so glad that we had a chance to do this. And I'm so excited for folks to be able to read your full book. I hope to be able to do the same thing soon. And I hear that at some point you're going to be back on the Camino. So that's wonderful. Hopefully I'll get to meet you in person. And, you know, that's always, I guess we'll just say, it seems like we all want to come back. What's driving you to come back?
Mm-hmm. I feel like now I did it one way and now I want to do it a different way. And I will say as a woman walking solo, it feels safer than a lot of things that I do. And so I can focus my attention in a different way. And so I like that about the Camino. I like that it's a safe community and environment for the most part. Yeah. Certainly more than walking down the street in Portland. I want to do the Camino experience in some different ways. So I'm already planning my third Camino, which is making my family point and laugh.
Well, that's great. Well, Shoshana, I have really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for sharing with us. And I know that folks are going to be inspired by your words. So wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And I'll close out the interview. Please stay on so you and I can say goodbye. But I just want to say to everyone, thank you for all of your support and for coming to hear these pilgrim stories, giving us an opportunity to share story, to process our experiences on the Camino. And I hope that if you have not yet walked or are considering walking again, I hope that the stories you hear here give you the courage to, you know, book that ticket and take that first step. So thank you, everyone. Buen Camino.
Buen Camino.